Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host, as always. And today we are joined by Gary Barnes, a high performance business and sales coach who has made a career out of transforming frustration into success. With over 30 years of experience in creating thriving businesses and personally selling over $280 million in products and services, Gary knows how to break through barriers to success. Despite challenges, including a multiple sclerosis diagnosis, he's achieved extraordinary feats in life and business, embodying resilience and determination. At Gary Barnes International, he applies his wealth of knowledge to help others achieve breakthrough mastery in business, utilizing a proven system that has quadrupled revenues for small businesses. An award-winning author, TEDx speaker, and recognized on major media outlets, Gary is passionate about empowering business owners, sales professionals, and entrepreneurs to reach their personal summits. I've asked Gary to join us here today on his birthday to share his personal story and what's worked best for him over the years. So Gary, thanks so much for joining us, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for having me. And thank you for recognizing my birthday, which we talked about. Just being another day in the world.
Right, of course. And we talked about that, and I agree 100%. So one thing before we get in, obviously, we're celebrating, you said your seventh year, which you don't look a day past, I don't know. Like I said, 50. I'm not even sure what to guess. But when I thought you were in your 50s, I didn't think 70. But before we go through this amazing career that you've had and is really only just beginning, how did you even get started in this field? Were your parents entrepreneurs? What did your parents do?
My mother was a legal secretary for a judge, and then she really did the back end work for my dad, who owned service stations. And I just watched him, and really it was my dad's influence, because the last service station that he owned was in Palm Springs, California. And in Palm Springs, there's not a lot of population, but he was number one in TBA, tires, batteries, and accessories. There would be an 18-wheeler tractor trailer full of all of these things every single week delivered to him. And he built relationships both with the local community, but also celebrities, Ava Gabor, Chuck Connor, some of the old timers. These are people, some people may not know who they are, but he would charge a dollar over invoice for a tire. Now, anyone that has been in a very out of the way location, you know, you have, when you have something like that happen, you get raked over the coals for a price because there's not a lot of competition. But people from Los Angeles would come out and have him do all of this work for them because they knew they would get a deal. And he was making quite a bit of money because he was doing it in volume. I now call that the Sam Walton philosophy of serving the masses and living with the classes.
I love that. So he decided that the best thing was to help as many people as possible, charging a fair price and making it up on volume. There's an unspoken work ethic underneath that that in some ways I feel is a miss in today's day and age, where some people, they're trying to, I'm not going to say anyone's name, but I have a friend, he's constantly working on these $300 million deals. Like, I just got to get this paper signed and then I'm going to get 4 points off this $300 million deal and I'll be set. And when that is, I think what happens for some people, at least when it comes to exiting a business, they have an exit and they have a big windfall. But in terms of getting to being able to have that exit, there's the grunt work that has to go in. Your dad's, I'm going to help 100 people. And I'm going to make a couple of bucks from each one. But because I help 100, I'll have a lot of money, versus some people that are like, I'm going to charge just one person a lot of money. And then they can't find the next customer.
And it's about building relationships. And even I had 9 years in real estate to where I was number one in the region, where I was not making a determination about the deal, the big deal. And then created one of the very first financial planning firms in the United States, and built to the top 3% in production as a solo producer. So I was an independent, but I never had a minimum. I remember one, I had a referral from someone that did a $50 investment in a retirement account, which literally cost me money for the labor and everything to do that. And they gave me one additional referral, which was to her parents, $70,000 in monies coming in. And the last referral they gave me was $1.2 million. And to me, it was not about the money. It was about serving. It was not about selling. It was truly serving. And when I'm serving, the reality of what I call the law of reciprocal, and I don't know if that's probably a term out there, but I really believe in the law of reciprocal because it's not about tit for tat. It's like you and I, we haven't known each other that long, but I'm here to serve you, not knowing where and if. I just believe that there is the organic connection that happens when we serve.
And I think a lot of people, maybe they feel passionate about what they do, but they're still struggling somehow. So can you speak to that a little bit? Because obviously, if everybody who said they were a hard worker would be successful, there'd be a lot more successful people. So can you speak to that a little bit? There has to be a little bit of something in there in terms of, I think you said earlier, maybe volume. Like that has to be, I don't know. Can you?
Yeah. One of the analogies I use is right along the lines of what you just said. I said, if it was just about hard work, every farmer and steel worker in the world should be gazillionaires because of how hard they work. So it's not about hard work. It's about working right. And part of it is there's a major block for people about receiving. And that sounds weird because people in business, they want to have the revenue come in. They want clients, customers. And yet there's many times a underlying negative belief that they don't deserve. And so this is working in the background. But the other thing is that when we focus on what we either want or don't want, primarily what we don't want to go broke. We want to pay our bills. I remember Jim Rohn was my first mentor. And he said, nobody ever gets up in the morning wanting to say, great morning, I get to go out and make enough money to pay my bills.
Yeah.
If we're focused on paying our bills, we're not going to, because that's a negative influence. We're out there to get somebody to do something that we want them to do when we want them to do it, to pay our bills. And so our focus is inadequate. It's actually skewed to where if I go out to serve and I'm looking for, in fact, J. Paul Getty said, find a need and fill it. As long as we have a product or service that is actually wanted, desired, and people are ready to engage in it, it doesn't really matter what it is. I remember back in the 80s, I think it was, the Pet Rock. I don't know. Do you remember the Pet Rock?
The Pet Rocks. I'm 40. You know, so, yeah.
Somebody has a rock in their driveway. They put a face on it, put it in a box, and they sell it.
Yeah.
But what did it do? It was in the United States anyway, where you think about Watergate, some of the distrust in the world, they needed something they could love that was going to love them back unconditionally and not eat. And so I still meet people that have their pet rocks because they named it. But would it work today? Probably not. And yet, so what is it that we have that is relevant to the society that we want to connect with? Mm. And when we do that, the rest of it, as long as we're in a position of receiving, I was working with one of my coaching clients this morning, and she said, I just want to serve. I want to help people. I want to serve. I want to help everyone. And here was my question. Are you part of everyone? And she goes, well, no. I go, how can everyone but you be everyone?
Right.
And all of a sudden, this look on her face, and it was about receiving. And you know, what I have found is that if people are not willing to invest, in most cases, the thing that they value the most, money, they're not ready to engage in what you have to offer. They're not ready to receive the benefit.
Right. I always say the two things that require the highest degree of human trust in friendship is to get someone to agree to have sex with you or give you money. Like I feel like those are, people will do lots of talking, but those two acts, typically, it's like really when the rubber meets the road, like, do I really trust this person? Like that's, you know, when all the true mental wobbles, the true hesitations, the true objections, you might say, come to surface. So
you're,
I
right.
Love Jim Rohn. Yeah. You said Jim Rohn was one of your mentors.
Yeah. He was my very first mentor. In fact, I go back to his very first program called Adventures in Achievement, where Tony Robbins was in our class sitting in the front row when he was living in his Volkswagen Bug.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah, I actually, one day, short side story, I was in Rancho Santa Fe, California, I guess San Diego. And anyways, went on a hike for a friend's birthday, just so have it. And I was, there's a group of people and we all were hiking and people just paired up. And I got paired up with this guy and I was talking to him. And I just recently just spent like a year. I just discovered Jim Rohn about a year ago and I was really loving his stuff. And it'd been a year and I was still really into his stuff. And this guy was asking me these questions and we were talking. I found out it's Darren Hardy, the owner and founder of Success Magazine, who now owns all of Jim Rohn's content. And then the night after the weekend, he showed up at my office and dropped off his own personal copy of his own worn out, beat up Jim Rohn CD set that I don't know if Darren signed it or Jim signed, I forget now. It's in storage. I'm on the other side of the world. But anyways, that's just a little side story there that I didn't even know who I was talking to.
Yeah, I have a suitcase with the original cassette tapes.
Yeah, and you'll never throw them out because Jim Rohn's stuff is great. That's so good. All right, if someone is starting out and struggling, they hear that, wow, you've sold $280 million worth of stuff. Okay, I need to serve. I need to be open to receive. Where else do you see are some of the biggest mistakes people are making?
One of the things that we actually spoke about this in the pre-interview, I teach around three topics or three steps, three keys for success in any business. And I think these are the things that people miss. And what's going to be interesting for some people is they're not complicated. It's simple concepts, not necessarily easy, but simple. And the first one is to be seen. If people don't know you're there, if they don't have any idea that you have a product or service that's going to benefit them in a meaningful way. And part of that is, you know, we have a tendency to tell everybody about, and this is, you know, selling 101 back in the day. You don't sell features, you sell benefits. But we tell people all the time about the features. And so even if we're seen, they don't know how to relate it to themselves. So if we don't connect the dots, but the adage of build it and they will come is a lie. And we know this. It's about showing up, and we're taught to, I'll ask people that have children, once you have a baby, what is the two things you want them to do first? And it's always walk and talk.
Right.
And I say, as soon as you walk and talk, we say, sit down and shut up. And so we have been told to get in line and don't have a voice. And I train speakers and I speak quite a bit. But the thing is that if we don't take our seat at the table, no one's going to give it to us. Right. And that seat at the table is there for each and every one of us. The second thing is to be safe. And that is really where we have been talking about. If we don't have an agenda to close somebody, now we all have an agenda to make money and to have sales. But if you feel like I am there to manipulate you to do something, internally, you're going to start walking away from me. You're going to look for the hook. And once you know that I'm there to know you and to know the story behind the story and whether or not I'm that missing link or maybe somebody that I know for you, but when I just truly want to know you as a human being, you become what I call a people magnet. You're going to be so unique, so curious that people will truly come towards you. Mm. The third thing is to be relevant. And when I ask the relevant question, I speak to the health industry at times, and I say, do Americans want to be healthy? And they all say yes. And I go, if that's a true statement, then why is McDonald's the number one restaurant in America? Mm. What do Americans want? Tastes good, fast, and cheap. It's not even cheap anymore. So when do Americans want to be healthy? They said, okay, when they're sick. So they said, do we have to change what we do? And I go, no, you have to change your messaging to make it relevant to them. And so it's going past what there's a process that I call from the so what to so that. So we have a product or service, and our podcast today is a so what. In essence, there's value, but it's still a so what. How do people take what we do here today and translate it into a so that for themselves? How do they use it? What are the takeaways, the external benefits that is going to give them that next so what for them that they can now do another so that? It's that never-ending story.
I love that. So instead of so what, in terms of what does that mean for me, you mean translating into it so that I can blank. Is that?
It's that, but it's also, I was speaking to a financial planning group on a cruise years ago, and I asked the question, "Why? What is your dream? What are you?" And one of the people, one of the planners, said they wanted to have $1 million in the bank. I said, "Why?" He said, "It would give me security." I asked one more question. I said, "Will it?" And he started to answer me, and it got stuck in his throat. And he
Yeah.
goes, "You." 2 weeks later, he hired me. But the whole idea was he hadn't gone past the money. The money is a so what? It's a so that in your business. But once you have the money, you don't go past the money. You and I have been around long enough to, around large numbers, that what I have said forever, if the number is too big, subtract a zero. If it's too small, add a zero. In the end, it's all zeros. It's all made up.
Yeah, it goes fast. It goes fast, that's for sure.
It's what it does. So once we get to that emotional so what in our businesses, then we get up in the morning and we will do the uncomfortable thing. We will, in fact, I was dealing with a client yesterday, and again, it was that thing, I just want to serve people, I want to help people. And we were sitting in a restaurant, and I said, "Okay, if you go up to the counter and you order this," that we were in a French bakery. And so if you order something and go, "I just want you to help me and not charge me for it," what do you think they're going to say?
They might have some more questions. They probably might say no because they got to order the supplies in order to make the breakfast. But at the same time, they may and still want to help you and be like, what's going on? Why? What's happening here?
It could be, but I'm sitting there in this one, and she had this real desire to help you capture. What she does is capture stories from people, legacy writing, so their stories don't die with them, so it can be shared with family that are not even born yet. And there was a woman that came over to the table and said, "How are you?" And it just looked like one of the workers. And I told her, I said, "There was something about her that there's a story there." And she goes, "Yeah." And so I said, "Well, you're going to ask her, have you ever thought about putting your stories in a book?" And she goes, "Oh, can I do that?" I go, "If you're willing." And so this person started walking out of the shop. And I said, "Go get her." And she did. It turned out the woman, who was probably early 30s, owned the bakery. And she does have a story, and she did want to do something. And so it's risking ourselves and allowing ourselves to be known, to have be safe with. And if she said no, it'd be okay. But to have that relevance, that something about what she did, she goes, "I've always thought about telling people about my story of where I came from and how I've been able to do this and to pass it on to other women."
That's powerful. That's powerful. Because we're all, it's all about human interaction. It's a strange phenomenon in the sense that, I didn't say this and I'm going to butcher it, but we're more connected than ever, but we're also more further apart. You talked about getting birthday wishes from people that you're connected on social media, but you've never had a meaningful exchange and they wish happy birthday, but a lot of this is like auto stuff, right? And so how do you, and it's just a strange thing because it's all about people. If I waved a magic wand and gave every listener here all the money that they wanted, what would they do? I know for myself, I got to travel the world and then I was doing it alone. And I wish I had someone to share it with. And then I realized what I really needed was to find my girl and start a family. And that's what I did because it's just real lonely. If you money alone, it's just Kanye West said it good. Money can't, having money's not everything, but not having it is. So once you got your roof and ramen paid for, then it's really about the other things that you're the bed that you're making for yourself to live into. And even I think people have lost to a certain extent this concept of for posterity's sake, meaning for the future generations and to respect your ancestors, how they lived and suffered and died to push things forward and to provide and to create the world so we could live today. And so what? Like, what are you going to do with it? You owe a debt to your ancestors to pass that torch forward for your bloodline and humanity. And I think that there is a, it is, it's turned into like an instant gratification I'm going to sit in a dark room just hitting this dopamine button over and 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 over again, like the rats with the heroin getting it from the water feeder, just like an addict hitting it. So let's talk about your career a little bit. What were some of your biggest challenges that you had in your career? Obviously, I think looking back, probably it seems like a clear path, but when you're at the time, maybe didn't know what the next step was going to be. What were some of the biggest challenges that you had?
I would say the biggest challenge I had was me. Because I grew up, even though my dad was my, in a sense, a mentor, somebody that I looked at what he did and I've implemented and copied a lot of what his philosophy was, but I grew up in a very destructive home life. I was the oldest. I was abused. I was told, no, I didn't deserve. I wasn't worthy. I wasn't anything. I was told I would never be wealthy because you have to be a crook. I went into the ministry and I was told you couldn't go into the ministry because you have to have a calling from God. And when I left the ministry, they said I was going to hell because I turned my back. There was no way to win.
I'm like, how do you win this game?
And so as I had developed, learning how to give myself permission to follow my what I call the nudge. And for me, the nudge is that external voice, that external awareness of, okay, it doesn't make sense why I'm doing this, but I'm going to do it because there's a nudge. And to legitimately trust myself and really start asking myself questions. And I came up in the industry when self-improvement, the mindset philosophies really was in its infancy. And so there really wasn't known. So I was really finding my way and I was lucky enough to find Jim and then some of the others, Zig Ziglar and Brian Tracy and the guys. But I kept hitting walls and I kept saying, okay, is this a wall saying that my parents, particularly my mother, was right, that I was not worthy. I wasn't worth to even be on the planet. And when I started looking at and giving myself permission to be here and to have an impact, not about ego, but about service, and to be able to contribute and to receive the compensation for that as well. That was the biggest challenge wasn't the economy. It wasn't in my financial planning days. I built it for over 30 years. I went through 9/11. I went through major downturns. It wasn't about the economy. It wasn't about the challenges of the business. And they were some big ones. But it was, how did I handle it? It was my response to the stimulus, not the stimulus. And so when I learned to adjust to that, then, like, I love flying. And I ask audiences all the time, when is an airplane 100% on course? Right. There is. It's when it's on the ground.
Oh.
When it's doing what it was not created to do. When it's in the air, you have all the adversity. You have wind. You have storms. You have other airplanes. You have all of this. And so it's, again, what do we do with the reaction of what happens? So when we have challenges in the economy, in politics, in religion, in social unrest, whatever it is, because I was going to do something around the birthday of saying, okay, how many of these things have happened over my lifespan? Right. And I don't want to scare people. But the reality is adversity is normal, and adversity is what stimulates us either forward or cripples us to stay where we are. And so the adversity allows us to be creative. Robbins always talks about not I can't, but how can I? And so it's like when I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, I lost everything from the neck down. I lost the ability to write, to walk. And over the period of time, I still have no feelings in my hands. They're like stone hands. I have very little feelings in my legs and my feet. I've fallen off two stages. But you look at where the whole world went through COVID. COVID allowed the world to connect out of disconnecting.
Right.
Because we have gone through, I have coaching clients now throughout the U.S. and right now in only two foreign countries, but I have had clients in eight foreign countries. Very few of my clients ever come into the office anymore. We do this. And so what was the benefit out of it? What was the benefit writing my first book when I was diagnosed? I was right in the middle of my financial planning career. I didn't tell anybody because if a doctor thinks you're going to die within 10 years, people don't want to give you money. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things. So after I sold the practice, people kept saying, write the book. And I hate writing, by the way. It's just one of those things. But the reality is, once I wrote the book, it opened up so many doors because I didn't write it as an MS book. I wrote it as an adversity book. And it's just one of those things that out of something that my phrase is, I would not wish my life onto anyone, but I would not change anything because I wouldn't be the man I am today if I did.
Oh, 100%.
So we started looking at time travel and all that kind of other stuff that people want to do. And I go, no, what? Or people will tell me, I wish I knew you 10 years ago. No, you don't. You weren't ready for me 10 years ago. They weren't ready for you 10 years ago. There are no accidents. You and I are connected now for a reason. I don't know all of the reasons. I just enjoy you. I enjoy listening to your backstory and I get a little glimpse of who you are, as not as a business person, but as a human being.
Yes. And that's really important. I think that's really profound. If you're trying to live your life to avoid adversity, I don't know, you're just going to live in a box. Nobody really knows. I mentioned this once with my group. I asked about whether you believe in God or not, doesn't matter. If you believe in God, then maybe you believe that we have an immortal soul. If you don't believe in God, then maybe you just believe that we will achieve immortality through technology someday. That's fine. In either case, or maybe you just believe in reincarnation, but we're coming back and try until we learn something. So you have three scenarios. I have an immortal soul, or I will achieve immortality through technology, or I am being reborn over and over again until I achieve these something. Whatever one of those you prefer, what would be the trophies on an immortal's timeline? What would be the trophies that they would put on their fireplace? And that's what we should be aspiring to live. That's right. Is it going to be the time where you avoided the adversity, where you got kicked and you just laid down, or the time that you overcame insurmountable odds when you did something for more than your own selfish reasons, right? Like you benefited too, perhaps, but maybe you helped change the world. Or even the small things, the time you helped the old lady across the street and no one was there to see you do it. What would be the trophies on an immortal's timeline, no matter how they became immortal, through reincarnation, technology, or your immortal soul? And I think that's what you're saying here to a certain extent, is that adversity is not something that we can avoid. And what matters most is how we respond to it. And that's actually what shapes our character. And for some reason, it seems to be what the game is about. And if you played a video game, and this is the thing in gamification, if it's too challenging, people don't want to play it. If it's too easy, people are bored. Alan Watts, I'm going to say one thing and I'm going to shut up. Alan Watts has this great talk called The Dream of Life. And then he talks about, let's assume that every night you went to sleep, you could dream 100 years of life, or however many years of life you wanted. And you could fully control this dream. So in the beginning, you would first, maybe a month or two, you go to sleep and you dream these lives of 100, 200, 300 years of life, all the pleasures of the world. But after a while, that would become boring and you would want some excitement. You'd want some risk. You'd want some adversity. And then you come out and you'd have further and further gambles until you come out and you're like, oh, that was a close call. And then one day you go, tonight when I go to sleep, I don't want to know I'm going to wake up at the end. And in the infinite possibility of the universe, you could have been dreaming the life that you're living today. And that's the whole Alan Watts dream of life thing. And I love it. It makes sense. People self-sabotage. If they're too cushy in their bubble, they self-sabotage. It's like a yin yang. There just has to be ugly to be beautiful. There has to be hot to be cold. I agree with this whole 100%. Can you speak to some of the skills and behaviors? We've danced around them when you gave your three, but to really hit the nail on the head for people, can you outline some specific skills and behaviors that are worthwhile to develop, looking back on your career and all the people that you've helped?
I think the first thing that was coming to mind as you asked that is to show up. It goes back to being seen, but to show up to serve. part of my mission statement is to make a difference and to empower, but not my power to you, but helping you connect the power that's already within you. And we still talk about motivational speaking, and I have it on all of this stuff, but I am an inspirational speaker that hopefully motivates you to inspire yourself. That motivation of self-motivation, the showing up, the following through, keeping promises. That is probably the thing that destroys more businesses and careers, is where you promise and you just don't feel fulfill the promise. And that can actually work in two different areas where you're not even fulfilling the promise to yourself and to others. So if you're not fulfilling the promise to yourself, you're not going to start believing yourself of any of the goals, desires, things that you have set in front of yourself to do. You're going, that was a great thing. You never do anything anyway in your subconscious. In the outward side is when we show up, we serve, and we follow through, whatever that is. Like I love making referrals. I made two referrals this morning, and people, every time I do it, it's just so people that you really did it. I was on a TV show a number of years ago, and there was a celebrity on it, and they were coming out with some health program. And one of my friends is a two-time Miss Universe. And I said, would you like to know them? Could I make that connection? And she said, yes. And so I went, I got all that, got his permission. I saw her 2 weeks later, and I gave her his contact info. I said, he's expecting her call. And she started to cry. And I said, what's wrong? She goes, nobody ever follows through. You did. So it was one of those things that we could do it on a small level. It'd be yesterday at the restaurant where I was telling the story about the woman that owns the bakery. They had misgiven us the wrong little French cake. And they said, no worries. They went in, got the right one, gave that to us, no charge. Doing the right thing. Yeah. That is just coming up and saying, it's no big deal. It's not about, well, you didn't tell us or whatever. It was always doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
Yes.
It doesn't always mean that your customer is always right, is always right. That's not true. Right. But it's when we own up to being human, but when we promise something, just follow through. Or if something gets in the way, communicate.
Yeah.
If we don't communicate with people, then they're making up their own story why we're not. And it probably has nothing to do where there's a break.
Right.
I mean, that sounds like more philosophical things, but those philosophical things translate into tangible results.
Yeah. And so a lot of this, people call them soft skills, but I think they're more the virtuous skills. Like some of these things are not, it's not learn to handstand walk 50 feet. It's not a tangible like that. It's just some of the stuff is real bedrock, basic. They say manners grease the wheel of social interaction. It just sounds like a lot of this stuff. And that's where a lot of people, I think, are getting tripped up. Where?
To follow up just a second on that is that in many sales trainings and speaker trainings, people are talking about the actual speaking. And I believe that sales and speaking has more to do with listening. That if I'm listening, how to connect, what your needs are, where your pain points are. Forever, people have said, how do you niche? What is your vertical? I go, I have been criticized my entire career that I could never do what I have done by not having a traditional vertical. My vertical is to solve for pain points. And so I have all kinds of industries, all kinds of organizations that bring me in to speak and to train and do all the things that I do, because my vertical is pain points that are universal across the board. Plus my personality, if I was dealing with CPAs or engineers or all day long, I go nuts. It's not my personality, I'd get bored. But so in that way, if we're truly listening to another human being, I don't have to think about what I'm going to do as a comeback to close the sale. I don't have to figure out what my overcoming an objection is. It's a conversation. We don't think about a script to have a conversation. You and I did not script this. This is freeform, and that's what we both love.
Yeah, but you have to be able to get comfortable building rapport and they get comfortable trying to keep the conversation focused in a sales environment. I love that you said that. Gary Bensavenga is touted as one of the greatest living copywriters in terms of sales performance. And he always says that problems are markets, not demographics or psychographics. The problem is the market. The problem is the market. And I really love what Greg Glassman, the founder of CrossFit, said. He said, markets are often unknown and unknowable. This is me, but if I were to ask you how many people are shopping for a car today, you could look at keyword searches and whatever, but ultimately it's unknown and unknowable, right? But everyone can acknowledge excellence. So if you are focused on a specific problem and being the most excellent at fixing that problem, that should see you through good times and bad, because excellence is visible to everybody.
I wonder, I love the keyword idea. I wonder if you were to put out a more of a broader, who is looking for reliable transportation than who is looking for a car? It may be an airplane. It could be a bicycle. It could be, what is the, is, again, the so what to so that? A car is a so what. The so that is independent transportation. And depending on where you are in the world, you may not want independent. You want the bicycle, you want scooters, you want whatever. And we just opened our funnel so wide that now we can, when we are listening, we can give them those connections for their desired so that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that because I don't own a car right now. I figure the money that I would spend on a car, I'm instead putting into land, and I'm actually building a homestead. I have three properties and we're developing them. And so instead I've got a bicycle and I bike my daughter to school every day. It's 5 kilometers there, 5 kilometers back. I do that to fit in some activity. And we just have drivers. Where I live in the Philippines, it's just so cheap to get like an Uber or a Grab car, they call it here, a Grab car to get a driver. Oh, we want to go away. We'll rent a car for a weekend. And if I rent a car for a weekend, it's like 50, 100 bucks. You know what I mean? And then that's with gas and everything. Or I could pay the $300 insurance, the $300 car payment, the $300 to $500 gas. And half the time, I'm just going to sit in my parking lot and not do anything anyway. So I try to spend my money on productive things. And for me, that's not a car. I just love that you said that because I was thinking I felt like you whacked my thinking there because I was like, how many people are looking for a car? But you're like, what about reliable transportation? I'm like, you're right. We've got a list of drivers that we have now. And we just text, I work, I don't drive. I all that time is productive time for me now because I don't have to worry about rush hour traffic. I don't care how long it's going to take for us to get there. I just send a couple of text messages. I get picked up, away we go. And I go places every day and I probably spend half what it would cost me to have a car.
Well, and really, the pain point is I want to get from point A to point B.
Yeah, reliable transportation. That's it. Well, reliable transportation. That's it, 100%. We have a driver that takes our nanny to take my daughter to all of her stuff. Like and it still costs me less than it would cost to have a car. So I just think that's such a brilliant, yeah, I love that. I love that. So what are some of the future trends that you see happening? And what are the things that you're advising people to be aware of the next 3, 5, 10 years? What do you see coming down the pipeline?
It's really looking at, you mentioned something about being connected and disconnected. Mm. There is a fairly famous picture that I've seen that is Union Station in New York City, where there's 2,000 people in the station and 99% of them have a phone on their ear. Mm. And really what we're looking at is how to connect, how to have a tangible relationship without exchanging DNA. And so to be able to, how to use technology in a meaningful way without abuse. Because we're all being bombarded with emails and all of the different strategies that people are touching us. But really, how do we build? It's still about building a relationship. Mm. Who are your perfect clients? What do they want? Where do they live? What are their pain points? Getting to know those things instead of just saying, how can I manipulate the technology to go out and take American Express created drip marketing. Hmm. And so every 6 months you get this really fancy envelope with colors and different sizes, and they would do it by volume. They weren't targeting their client, they were targeting a human being. But they knew because of the volume, they would get a percentage of return. but it was so disconnected, there was no relationship. And you start looking at where some of the other companies now, even the second level companies like Square and PayPal and some of those, but Visa and MasterCard took over from American Express and Carte Blanche and Diners Club because their market wasn't fulfilling the need of the client. And so we're going to shift. And as we shift, if just because we don't relate to it, doesn't mean we shouldn't shift to it. And so how does our perfect client take in information? How do they want to digest what you have? I'm still of the school that to read a book online or on my phone or on a tablet is painful. I still need that physical book. But so I'm credited now with 10 books, and I have one on Spotify. But a woman came to me last week and she said, I listened to your Beaver. It's called the Beaver Book online. And she was crying. She said, I don't have time to read, but I listened to it while I was driving.
Right.
And how do people want to digest? How do we make it simple for people to say yes to us? And that goes back to, as we have our products and services, and really to the beginning of our conversation where some people want to only hit the home runs, is that they walk into a room. The analogy I use is you walk into a Starbucks, and for me as a guy, I see a woman sitting there and I walk up to her and say, hi. I put out my hand to shake her hand. And I go, my name is Gary. Will you marry me? How well is that going to work? And if she says, yeah, I want to run away. But marketing, how many times do we do that? We just show up and buy my stuff instead of saying, hey, have a pink spoon. Come in and see if it's the right fit. That's why clothing stores, shoe stores, they have dressing rooms. You get to put it on to see if it works. That's why Amazon has built a tremendous business of saying, hey, order it. If it doesn't work, send it back. We'll give you back your money.
Yeah.
And so are we disseminating what we have as a product or service in a way that people can be introduced to it on a low-risk arena? Can they do it for just a few dollars, no long-term commitments, and see if it's the right community, the right, because like with you, you have your community that you have. But once a person comes in brand new, I ask this question all the time to audiences. I say, what is the very first thing people buy from anyone the first time they buy it? And they give me all kinds of reasons. They give me you, they give me, I go, no, my answer is the first time they buy anything from anyone, they're buying borrowed belief. They're buying your belief in what you are saying that is going to perform or give them the benefit that you're promising them. It's only in the experience that belief then translates to them, transfers over into their life, their business. And by doing so, now they're willing to take another step, maybe deeper with you, or maybe that's all they needed and they can stay there or go away. But at the same time, it's one of those things that if we're just wanting to take that circuit breaker away and just say, hey, give me multiple thousands of dollars because I'm a good talker, that for me, it doesn't, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying it doesn't work for me.
Yeah, fair enough. Gary, I've got pages of notes here. I'm a writer downer, so I've been filling up my notebook here. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
Something that was occurring to me, one of my early clients was a corporate executive that became one of the owners of Copyblogger back in the day. And she shared with me a concept that she learned called the bikini effect in marketing. And I go, well, what's the bikini effect? She goes, women wear bikinis and give away 90% of the good stuff, but people still buy the other 10%. The whole concept there is, and people do this, and it's not so much, I don't see it as much anymore, but people want to give away a white paper or something that has virtually no value because it's the ethical bribe to where, give me your email address so I can sell you and drip on you later on. No, give away your good stuff because there's only three types of buyers. There's the buyer that is a do-it-yourselfer, the person that is always going to be a do-it-yourselfer, It'd be like here in the States, they go to Home Depot. They're not going to go to a contractor. They're going to go there and do it themselves. So why wouldn't I want to give them all of my good stuff? They can use it, but they're still engaging with my good stuff. The second person is, I call them the IKEA people, where they go to IKEA, they get something, they get it home, it explodes on the floor, and then they call IKEA to come and put it together. And it's that transitional person. And then the third person is the person that says, where have you been all my life? Just come and do it either with me or for me. And when you have products and services that are disseminating in those three areas, you're giving away your good stuff. You're allowing people to come in and taste the 100% real product before they make any long-term commitments. That's how we build relationships. Because in a relationship, the number one thing in a relationship, and you hit on it, was trust. And you can't, trust is not automatic, it's earned.
I love, yes, trust is not given, it is earned. That's right. I typically don't trust people until I've been through some sort of drama with them, because that's when I always say everyone will be your friend when the sun is shining, their pockets are full, and their belly's full too. But who are they when it's cold and dark and rainy, and when they're hungry and they're broke? That's when you see people's real true colors. And until I've gone through some sort of experience like that, I always know that I may not know all seasons of their character, so to speak. So that's so
Well,
profound.
Brian Tracy had a saying years ago that I was with him for a while, and he said, when you first see the person for who they are, believe it. And what you said, it's only in those adversity, in those fulfillment of promises or whatever, that you're really seeing the real person, not the rhetoric. It's not the, as somebody, I saw something on Facebook the other day where they were talking about politicians and they go, all this good stuff. That was the campaign. And afterwards they go, nothing like what you had described. And I go, yeah, you voted. And so that's what we're used to.
It's a very unfortunate. But the good news is there are good people out there. Okay, if people want to learn more, if they want to get in touch, if they want to see what you're doing, what are the best ways for them to get engaged and stay in touch?
One of the things that we actually talked about, I have a free gift from Gary. It's freegiftfromgary.com. I do a group session and they can come in for free for 30 days, which I do a group call on Zoom. I call it group Q&A mastermind, to where we spend an hour for any of the things that people have on their minds or questions. And what it has turned into, it's an international group. And what it's turned into, if I don't know the information, like if you ask me something on the technology, I'm going to go, it's above my pay grade, but people in the group have that ability. So it's just freegiftfromgary.com. But all the social media, I answer all of my own social media. GaryBarnesInternational.com is my website. The Gary at GaryBarnesInternational.com is my email, and I answer all of my personal email. The biggest thing is that, I don't believe in selling. I believe in sharing. And I love connecting people with resources. And if there is a need, or it's like getting to know you, referring people to you, if we're not in competition, we're in collaboration.
100%.
And when we really get into that mindset, it becomes a lot of fun. But I love following people on social media and just being that resource.
I love that. I love that. So those, go check out freegiftfromgary.com. Go get your free 30 days. You can engage, you can ask him all the questions you want yourself on his, it's twice a month, a twice monthly Zoom. Yeah, go check that out at freegiftfromgary.com. You can find out more about his books and his speaking and all that at garybarnesinternational.com, GaryBarnes International, InternationalIntranational.com. Gary, thank you so much for coming and sharing so candidly with us, knowing that you've got your own following, your own family, your own birthday guests, all your other stuff that you could be doing right now. Thank you for coming and giving this gift and sharing with us. I sincerely, truly appreciate it. And I just wish,
Well,
thank you.
you're very welcome. And this is the best birthday gift that I can give, because this is who I am, not what I do. And I just love spending the time with you.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much.